There's a geneticist, David Reich, that insists in a recent article in the New York Times that science should be open for results that point in the direction of real difference between so-called human races, where his argument is that this could prevent a hostile takeover by racist pseudoscience through, as he says, laying out a rational framework for discussing differences among populations. Mm-hmm. You're part of a group of over 80 scientists that have signed a debate article against this. Would you say that Reich's approach is still racist, despite his claiming otherwise?
Well, I mean, it's quite controversial to decide who's a racist and who's not. I think that when I arrived here, that piece, I learned about it right when I arrived in Germany that afternoon. And I think what was quite shocking to many of us was to see the New York Times, you know, after at the turn of the millennium, the New York Times published a bunch of articles citing population geneticists who were arguing just the opposite, that, you know, biology had proved that there was no such thing as race. Part of my work is as a historian, and so I was always concerned about this reporting because I understood that most of those population geneticists, what they really meant was the socially constructed version of race is not real. But the scientific notion of race that we construct through our high-tech science is real. And so that bit of what was going on in the scientific community was never understood by the public, I think, because of this reporting. And it opened the door wide open for someone to write what Reich wrote in the New York Times, which is that race is biologically, there are substantial differences that we can discern using these high-tech sciences that we now have that show us that there are, as Reich put it, quote, substantial differences between socially defined groups that overlap onto race. And the problem, from my point of view, is that Reich, while he professes to want to have a discussion about this, is not clarifying, for people the range of views among scientists about this issue, the fact that there's never been a consensus about the utility of race, that there's multiple concepts of race in science. And is taking a very, kind of simple approach. People need to get their heads out of the sand and see that race is real without helping the public understand that, A, there's multiple concepts of race out there, and B, the meaning of race is really going to differ depending on the context. For example, here in Germany, the term Rasse is not used in the human population genetics community. And as I understand it, although I'm just learning the German context, it's okay to talk about Rasse when we're talking about Hunde, but not when you're talking about humans. So the way that Reich presents this, and my concern about it, is it opens the door open to very simplistic claims about race, which makes it easy to be appropriated by the alt-right, the ultra-right, and those are my concerns.
Okay, so let's have a look into the some way maybe productive also part of considering what's often referred to as race. You're exactly right. I think in Germany people very much refrain from using the term, even though they might start talking about ethnic groups or something like that, and then there's something similar in mind, but maybe not the same. In 2005, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States approved a drug that explicitly targeted African-American patients with heart failure, and that was justified through the insight that high blood pressure was more of a common reason for them than for others to suffer from heart disease, as I got that right. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, this could be seen as something that could produce a class medicine that treats one class of people different from the others. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you could see it as something progressive, because before you had something like a white male ideal type that just didn't see those aspects. Mm-hmm. How would you say, like, isn't this something like a double bind situation in the sciences? How could one approach this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where it is crucial that people understand that there's multiple concepts of race, and they mean different things. That you're referring to Bydell, which one of the main authors on this piece that you mentioned, which was a response to Reich that appeared on BuzzFeed, co-authored by 67 natural and social scientists, even though it's being mostly portrayed as being from social scientists, there was quite a lot of input from biologists and population genetics on this. But Jonathan Kahn wrote a whole book on this debate for those people who are interested in the behind-the-scenes story of how we got Bidil, the first quote-unquote African-American drug. It's a very contentious story. We won't be able to get into it in 5 minutes, but to give your readers some understanding of the complexities of these issues, we can talk about, sickle cell, which a lot of people have argued, this is a classic example of where we should use race in medicine. There's a high proportion of people with African ancestry who have the trait, the sickle cell trait, and we explicitly address this in the BuzzFeed response, that the issue here is not being black or African American. The issue here is being in an area, a region that has malaria. Because it turns out that resistance to malaria co-evolves along with sickle cells. So it's associated. But malaria does not just occur in the African continent. It occurs in other parts of the world. And if we started to say that sickle cell was a black disease, then when people who weren't from you're relying on doctors to discern that, and B, if you have someone present from who doesn't look black but is from another part of this world of the world where there is malaria, you wouldn't necessarily test them for that. So it's it has nothing to do per se with race. It has everything to do with malaria. And I think often this is the problem with these categories, particularly a simplistic understandings of them. But it does cut both ways, and in the U.S. there's been an argument as of writ late, but it's caused a lot of debate and controversy of whether or not we should be using racial categories, even in the American context. Is that the correct way to do it, or should we be categorizing in other ways? And I think that complexity of the debate is what is being missed when we start making very simple comments about race.
I'm getting back to Reich's argument of laying out a rational framework. Mm-hmm. Isn't that maybe even something that you could go along with? Or should mm-hmm. there be one framework? Or is it something like, how should it be?
That's a very good question. One of the points I made in my talk yesterday, one of my main critiques of Reich is when he was asked by the BBC to respond to the BuzzFeed response, his response was not to the substance of our argument. His response was only to say, I'm very happy to have introduced this discussion. Then he emphasized the importance of scientists who were in the know to dominate the discussion. And what he means by that are his colleagues. He's not including in that biologists who might disagree with his perspective, social scientists who understand the histories of these categories and how they shape how population geneticists think about race. And so I agree with him that we need a rational framework, but what we will disagree over, I'm sure, is what constitutes that rational framework. And it can't, in my view, just be a scientist of a certain type knows all approach, because what that does is it shuts down conversation, it shuts down the rational dialogue, it is a kind of new form of silencing. And I think that's the problem with David Reich's position, is it sounds great. Let's create a rational discussion about this. People have had their heads in the sand too long, haven't been able to talk about race. Let's talk about it using a rational perspective. Let's make sure, though, this is me speaking now, let's make sure as we develop that rational perspective, it isn't an autocratic perspective that represents only one view.
Okay, so maybe starting from that also, we can go into a very specific field. You told me before that's not your field of expertise, but that's no problem, because when it comes to DNA analysis or DNA science and the topic of racism in Germany, one of the most debated topics in the last 2 years, I think, was that of DNA phenotyping, mm-hmm. which means that you take a sample of DNA and compare it against the database that tells you what skin tone that person might have or what hair color. Mm-hmm. And that's being used mostly in police work and this, the like. And recently we had Denise Sindacom-Cort here. Mm-hmm. She's a professor in London who's working in this field. And, well, her strong argument was that this would reduce this specific type of phenotyping would reduce discrimination, because people would be excluded from those who would be questioned by the police, even before they would notice that they're being checked. So there's something about this that that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But there's also another part. She was really strongly referring to saying that. This is something like, okay, we have skin tone, we have hair color and everything like that. They don't tell them, well, we have an African-American male here who's responsible for that. But they say he looks like this, he has a skin color within this range and all that. But when the police gets this information, of course, they immediately translate it back into racist terms. They have their idea of populations in their city. Mm-hmm. So do you think science really has the power to change the mind, the categories, and that framework of people?
Well, I mean, this I also talked about yesterday in the lecture I gave, that there's a problem if we want to say that science sits over here and has a different understanding of race than what society has. I mean, where do scientists get their categories from in the first place? They get them from the societies in which they live. You know, there would be, you know, in Germany, you're not going to study African Americans. I mean, you don't have that category really available to you to do genetic studies of. I mean, it would make no sense. So these categories are produced in particular social milieus, and the geneticists are not somehow immune from those socially produced concepts. They may provide us with important information, critical information that can help us refine our ideas and can contest our ideas sometimes about them. But just as a social scientist or a historian could provide that information as well. So I think the new wave of things, but this is also an old argument. The argument that when we look at skin and physical facial features, we get it wrong because that's the popular understanding. I can see it, you can see it, we can all see it. The correct way is if we had the fancy technology that the scientists have. If we were able to get underneath literally the skin and look at the molecules, then the truth will be revealed. This is a very classic truth versus ideology kind of way of understanding it. We're duped by what we see. The understanding comes from the experts being able to read in fine-grained ways. I mean, this is in a way a kind of Marxist analysis of how truth is produced. You know, I don't want to question that we can learn new things by looking under the skin, but it's not as if those scientists are immune from the ideologies as well. So I think if we're going to, as you all in Germany, consider taking on these new technologies, it's essential to have a robust debate that includes a wide range of views so you understand how those claims, those expert claims, are being made. And again, I go back to the need to not make that an autocratic process.